You're listening to the CyberWire Network, powered by N2K.
Hey, everybody. Today, I want to highlight a name that all of us know well, and that is our sponsor, Splunk. You need to keep operations humming around the clock, but potential disruptions are everywhere. Splunk helps you predict problems and find and fix issues fast so you can reduce risk and ditch downtime. The world's largest enterprises rely on Splunk's unified security and observability platform to become more efficient, resilient, and innovative. With Splunk, you can react quickly, evolve faster, and be ready for anything. Stay ahead of disruptions. Learn more at splunk.com/resilience. And we thank Splunk for sponsoring our show. In the complex world of enterprise identity, securing legacy web apps at scale can be daunting. Strata Identity makes it simple. With Strata, you can effortlessly integrate non-standard apps with any identity service, like MFA or SSO, with zero coding and zero hassle. Designed by identity architects for identity architects, Strata works with every vendor, standard, and app architecture. This means your apps can now speak modern protocols and integrate seamlessly with your chosen identity services. From securing on-prem web apps to migrating away from outdated identity providers or consolidating them, Strata helps you keep your complex access policies as you modernize your identity infrastructure and get rid of technical debt. Join leading organizations like 3M, Dallas County, and CIBC in securing your apps with Strata. Visit strata.io/cyberwire, share your identity security priorities, and receive a complimentary pair of AirPods Pro. Offer valid for organizations with over 5,000 employees. Connect today at strata.io/cyberwire. Southwest flights are back in the air after an IT issue disrupted them yesterday. Paradise ransomware source code has been leaked online. Some networked camera feeds may be accessible to unauthorized viewers. TSA is preparing a second, more prescriptive pipeline cybersecurity directive. The Russo-U.S. summit is underway. Our guest is Jay Paz from Cobalt on bad actors targeting hackers. Joe Kerrigan looks at malware hosted on Steam, and the face of Anonymous has been extradited from Mexico to the U.S. From the CyberWire studios at Datatribe, I'm Dave Bittner with your CyberWire summary for Wednesday, June 16th, 2021. U.S. domestic carrier Southwest Airlines has restored normal service after an IT incident caused about 500 flights to be canceled and delayed roughly 1,300 more. The U.S. Federal Aviation Administration halted Southwest Airlines flights in a temporary ground stop Tuesday after Southwest experienced IT issues with its reservation systems. The ground stop was lifted early in the afternoon. Despite the widespread alarm on Twitter to the effect that Southwest had to have been a ransomware victim, that seems to have not been the case. The Wall Street Journal puts the incident down to what the airline called a systems issue and connectivity problems, so it was apparently a glitch and not an attack. Tuesday's outage represents the second time in 2 days that Southwest IT problems snarled flight scheduling. On Monday evening, flights were delayed when other connectivity issues interfered with a third-party weather data provider's ability to deliver its information to the airline. The barriers to entry in the ransomware market, already unpleasantly low, may soon get even lower. The source code for the Paradise strain of ransomware, a commodity in the ransomware-as-a-service criminal market since it appeared on the scene in 2017, has been leaked and posted to the XSS hacking forum, Bleeping Computer reports. It's now available for free, at least to active participants in the XSS forum. Among the alerts CISA issued yesterday was one concerning a vulnerability in ThruTech's P2P software development kit, a supply chain risk for networked camera vendors who use the P2P SDK. The risk the vulnerability poses is unauthorized viewing of video. Security firm Nozomi has published an account of the issue. They point out that it's difficult for users of networked cameras to identify the provenance of peer-to-peer functionality or the security of the software that delivers it, and so they recommend that the best way to prevent captured audio-video content from being viewed by strangers over the internet is to disable peer-to-peer functionality. CISA's alert contains a set of useful mitigations. TSA is preparing a second pipeline cybersecurity directive, FCW reports. This one will focus on risk mitigation. Sonia Proctor, TSA's assistant administrator for surface operations, yesterday told subcommittees of the House Homeland Security Committee that the coming directive will be a security-sensitive information document and will be rather prescriptive in terms of the mitigation measures required. The summit between Presidents Biden and Putin is now underway in Geneva. The American side is expected to raise Russian complicity in cybercrime. The Russian side is expected to offer extradition of criminals to the U.S. if the U.S. will honor similar Russian extradition requests. The Guardian is following the summit's progress. The close attention this meeting is expected to give cybersecurity issues probably represents a new normal in Russo-American relations. The New York Times observes that these summits are now about cyber the way they were once about nuclear weapons. Cyber attack is less immediately frightening than a nuclear exchange, but it's also a great deal more difficult to deter or to arrange confidence-building measures. Part of the problem lies in the problem of attribution. There are few human events less ambiguous than a missile launch. The same can't be said of a cyber attack, where misdirection and doubt are so notoriously pervasive. CyberScoop quotes FireEye's CEO Kevin Mandia on his company's own experience investigating the SolarWinds supply chain compromise. FireEye's Mandiant unit was among the first to discover the problem and attribute the action to Russia. Mandia told a CyberScoop organized conference yesterday, quote, "That's the challenge of cyberspace. It is so anonymous and they have such great plausible deniability that it makes it frustrating to understand that if anything happens in the physical world, is it genuinely connected to the cyber world or not? What I learned from the SolarWinds implant and who they targeted was that the software and security companies are absolutely fair game for espionage." End quote. Russia has consistently denied involvement in the SolarWinds incident, as well as involvement in the recent ransomware attacks that Cisco's Talos unit characterized as privateering. And finally, speaking of extradition, the so-called Face of Anonymous, who'd been living in Mexico, has been shipped back to the United States, where he's wanted for a variety of computer crimes. And no, that face isn't a Guy Fawkes mask, but rather, as Naked Security reports, the natural face of one Christopher Doyon, who goes by the hacker name Commander X, who allegedly skipped bail in California back in 2011 to live as a celebrity fugitive in Canada and then Mexico, where he was apprehended last week and extradited to the U.S. on June 12th. Mr. Doyon, now 56 years old and a former resident of Mountain View, California, in the center of Silicon Valley, faces charges of failing to appear for a 2012 status hearing after his arrest in connection with a distributed denial-of-service attack against systems belonging to Santa Cruz County, California. The DDoS was allegedly part of a protest against changes to Santa Cruz enforcement policies that would have affected when and where homeless people might camp in the jurisdiction. The U.S. Department of Justice explains that failure to appear after pretrial release carries a maximum penalty of 2 years imprisonment, a $250,000 fine, and 3 years of supervised release. The Justice Department says, with respect to the 2011 indictment, The maximum statutory penalty for conspiracy to cause intentional damage to a protected computer is 10 years imprisonment, 3 years of supervised release, and a fine of $250,000, plus restitution if appropriate. So stay in school, friends, straighten up, and fly right. Security professionals recently found themselves the targets of online social engineering campaigns specifically targeting them, and the enhanced access they may have to their clients' and companies' systems. Jay Paz is Director of Pentest Operations and Research at Pentest platform provider Cobalt, and he joins us with these insights.
It's important to note, right, that when we're talking about hacker, we aren't just talking about malicious attackers. We are talking about security professionals that make a living assessing networks or applications for customers or for their own company. And so they are also here considered a hacker, right? And then the other side of it is those that are malicious attackers, those that are doing it for the financial aspect of it, or just as part of a group, a state-funded group, perhaps, those are also hackers. And so we want to make sure that we are capturing both of those personas in this conversation.
And what is it about a cybersecurity professional that makes them particularly attractive to adversaries?
The amount of knowledge that they have, what they know about the environments that they're testing or the companies that they work for. They have a insider knowledge that is extremely valuable for those individuals that are doing this for malicious reasons.
So what are your recommendations? I mean, what should organizations do to make sure that these folks don't fall particular victim to these adversaries?
I think the best thing that any organization can do is not assume, right? And we talked about it a little bit, that assumption that security professionals know how to defend their own environments is flawed. And a lot of times, security awareness training or even more in-depth training isn't provided to some of these individuals, either to save money or because they don't feel like they need it. And I think similarly, it's important for security professionals to realize that we need to continue to learn and to continue to stay ahead of the malicious attackers. And so I think it's a partnership between the organization and the individual to really make sure that those gaps are being covered.
Yeah, it strikes me that this may require a certain amount of humility to recognize that, yes, even though you are above the average person when it comes to knowledge of these things, there are still areas where they can come at you.
100%. And I think that that's true in any profession, right? Like, you see Major League Baseball players getting out there and getting their reps in batting practice and field practice. And just because they've made it to the big show doesn't mean that they can't improve or that they shouldn't continue to practice or get better at their craft. And I think that applies to all of us as well. It's important for all of us to realize that these malicious attackers are continuously getting better and better at what they do. And they're finding new targets and new approaches to arrive at the information that they're trying to steal. And while today this hacker-on-hacker attack may be the thing, tomorrow it could be a completely different group of people that they are targeting. And so it's important to look at our security programs in a more holistic approach to make sure that we're capturing all of these nuances.
That's Jay Paz from Cobalt.
Managing the requirements for modern security programs is increasingly challenging and time-consuming. Enter Vanta. Vanta gives you one place to centralize and scale your security program. Quickly assess risk, streamline security reviews, and automate compliance for ISO 27001, SOC 2, and more. you can leverage Vanta's market-leading trust management platform to unify risk management and secure the trust of your customers. Plus, use Vanta AI to save time when completing security questionnaires. CyberWire daily listeners can get $1,000 off by going to vanta.com/cyber. That's vanta.com/cyber.
And joining me once again is Joe Kerrigan. He's from the Johns Hopkins University Information Security Institute and also my co-host over on the Hacking Humans podcast. Hello, Joe.
Hi, Dave.
Interesting story caught my eye, and I thought it would interest you, you being a gamer.
Yes,
I know.
I'm elite gamer, Dave.
So this is an article written by Becky Bracken. It's over on the ThreatPost website, and it's titled Steam Gaming Platform Hosting Malware. There's some interesting details here. Unpack it for us, Joe.
All right. So it sounds a lot scarier than it is for Steam users, but it's not really what's happening here. Let me tell you what's happening here. Mm-hmm. Is somebody out there has figured out that they can use Steam as a distribution platform for images that have a set of malicious code or some malicious code packed into something called the ICC profile.
Mm-hmm.
ICC profile is the ICC is the International Color Consortium.
Right.
And they work on standardizing colors across applications.
Yeah.
And image formats like PNG, Portable Network Graphic, which is an open image format, have allowances for putting these profiles into the image.
Right.
Now, I looked up the specification of these, and these profiles can be of n bits long, which means they can be arbitrarily big.
Mm-hmm.
And what that means is that you can put anything in there that you want, and it probably will not affect the rendering of the image.
Right.
But it may not be a valid ICC profile, but it's still there.
Yeah, and the ICC profiles are there, so if you were to send an image off to be printed, for example.
Correct.
It would tell the printer, these are the things you need to know about this image to have it print properly.
Yeah, here are the exact colors I want you to use.
Yeah. Yep.
And the printer has its interpretation from the ICC, and the image displayer has its, you know, the application you're using has its interface with the ICC. And so it's just basically a standardized way of doing things.
Right.
It's just being abused here. As an opportunity. But the code will not run on its own, right? So if you just view the image, that doesn't run the code.
Okay.
What has to happen is somebody has to be tricked into running some other code that goes out, fetches the image, gets the decompressed code out of the image, and then executes the decompressed code.
Hmm.
So what they're speculating is happening here is that they're prepping for a larger scale attack. They're going to send out a bunch of phishing emails or a bunch of probably just a bunch of phishing emails. And they're going to get people to click on links or download malicious attachments that are really very small. And that's really the objective here is the distribution of the malware will be easier because the malware that actually goes out and fetches this image will be tiny.
Right.
Maybe a couple lines of code.
Okay.
And then it's going to go out to Steam, which you can access through a web interface and get this image. Download the image, unpack the ICC profile, find the code, execute the code. That's how this is going to work.
So they're basically hiding this code in plain sight on
right.
a publicly accessible website
yep.
that is Steam, and profile images don't generally draw a whole lot of attention to
exactly.
themselves.
Now, we've seen this done before on Twitter. Twitter being used for command and control and other social media sites, any place you can put a public image,
mm-hmm.
you can do this. But this is the first time we're seeing it on Steam.
Hmm. Has Steam had any response to this?
As of the recording, no. It's owned by Valve. Steam is owned by Valve
mm-hmm.
Software, and they have not responded to it. I don't know how they would respond to it. Or how they would control for this. I mean, I guess you could check the ICC profile and make sure it's not being abused, or you could limit image size.
Yeah.
But these are just source code, so it's going to be small anyway.
Right.
I mean, right. checking for image size is not going to be very helpful.
I wonder if you could just simply strip the ICC code info out of images that are being used as profile pictures.
You could strip a lot of the metadata out.
They're being just displayed on a screen.
Right.
So presumably, you know, it's not something, it wouldn't make that much of a difference if you were to do so for security reasons. But who knows? I mean, Steam's big, so there are lots of images up there, right?
Right. They have, this article actually gives you the number. They've got over 20 million users.
Wow. Wow. Yeah. Interesting. Yeah. You know, one of the things that fascinates me about this is that, you know, over the years, I've had to shed my perception that graphics files are pretty much benign.
Right.
You know, because they've become a popular place for folks to hide things.
Right. Well, still, if you just look at the graphic, if you just look at load it up in a web browser, nothing's going to happen.
Right.
You're going to have the loader execute the software. Now, I guess if you wanted to, you could compile and run the code yourself that you find in some random image, but I wouldn't recommend doing that.
Yeah, that's an edge case for sure.
That seems like a very bad idea.
Yeah. Hmm. All right. Well, interesting thing to look out for. I mean, is this imminent? As you said, it seems like they're preparing for something else. So, I mean, any advice for folks to protect themselves here?
I would say the standard advice: don't open email attachments, don't click on links, those kind of things.
Right.
There's not really anything you can do. Steam. One of the reasons I think they're using Steam is because a lot of legitimate traffic goes to Steam.
Yeah.
Right. So it wouldn't stick out, especially if you have a Steam client installed, it won't stick out on any packet capture tools because it will just look like normal traffic.
I see. Yeah, yeah, absolutely. All right, well, again, it's over on ThreatPost. The article is titled Steam Gaming Platform Hosting Malware. Joe Kerrigan, thanks for joining us.
It's my pleasure.
And that's the CyberWire. For links to all of today's stories, check out our daily briefing at thecyberwire.com. The CyberWire podcast is proudly produced in Maryland out of the startup studios of Data Tribe, where they're co-building the next generation of cybersecurity teams and technologies. Our amazing CyberWire team is Elliot Peltzman, Peru Prakash, Kelsey Bond, Tim Nodar, Joe Kerrigan, Carol Terrio, Ben Yellen, Nick Vilecki, Gina Johnson, Bennett Moe, Chris Russell, John Petrick, Jennifer Iben, Rick Howard, Peter Kilpie, and I'm Dave Bittner. Thanks for listening. We'll see you back here tomorrow.